Welcome back to This Green Earth. I'm Claire Wiley, and now I'd like to welcome Beth Tobin to the program. Beth is a professor emerita of English and Women's Studies at the University of Georgia and author of many books many times over, and is coming on the show to discuss her latest. It's called Loving Insects, and the book vividly details the work of early American artist, naturalist, and specimen hunter John Abbott, and it serves as a reminder of how his contributions shaped modern science. So thank you so much for being a part of This Green Earth, Beth.
Thank you very much for having me.
Well, let's start with your beginning. I like to get to know our guests a little bit more. So I had introduced you as an author many times over. How did you start into this world of writing?
I think it all began with Jane Austen.
Okay.
And her novel, Emma. I fell in love with that book when I was in high school, and I continued to study it. And throughout undergraduate and graduate school, and I wrote like a chapter on it in my dissertation. But I love that world. I love the world of 1760 to 1820. What caught my eye in Emma was Mr. Knightley, who is the kind of like hero figure. Who is a landowner, and he's a farmer. He kind of manages his property, and he knows the latest techniques for agricultural success. He's generous. He gives an apple crop to a poor old lady who has nothing. So he's got this generosity. He's clearly a steward of his land. So I was lucky enough to get a summer residency in the Newberry Library in Chicago.
Oh.
And had this whole thing buzzing in my head about agriculture and Mr. Knightley. So I started reading agricultural manuals from the 18th century. So I kind of have this tendency to do this deep dive into the archives and the materials from the period. And so I ended up writing about that, about Mr. Knightley and agriculture. And so that's just kind of, I just started seeing agriculture everywhere in the 18th century, like poetry. There are long poems devoted to agricultural practices. I studied those. So I just kind of moved through from agriculture into more natural history. And I have had a long career, so I've had time to do this. I moved from literature and poetry into natural history. And I'd say for the past 20 years, I've been focused on the history of natural history.
It's interesting how we sometimes dive a little deeper into those nooks and crannies of a book that intrigue us. And it sounds like you really brought to life, as you were reading that, what that looked like, the shape of that character, and how who would act in the real world. So when you then turn your eye onto this historical figure, John Abbott, who really doesn't have a lot of press and doesn't have a lot of information around him, how did you find out about him, and what did that dive in look like for you?
I was in Arizona. I lived in various places. So I was at Arizona State University, and they had an incredible section on kind of natural history, travel narratives, things like that. And I just kind of sat down on the floor in the stacks and started pulling books out. And I pulled this one very slender volume out, which was about John Abbott. There are only two books really about him. And this one was published by Entomology Collection at the Natural History Museum in London. And she was a showing kind of what they had of his work. So that's how I first was acquainted with him. And then my husband and I moved from Arizona to Georgia, and then that being in Georgia, bang, that just clicked it, because that's where Abbott, he was an Englishman. Mm-hmm. His father was a lawyer, and he was supposed to be a lawyer, but he loved insects so much. He just wanted to study them, and eventually became this incredible artist. So he wanted to draw insects, and there are various places you can go in the world where there are lots of insects, and Georgia just happens to be one of them. And so he ended up in Georgia. And then, so because I was in Georgia and he spent his life there, Georgia's natural beauty, I was so surprised by. I'm like, you know, someone who grew up in Massachusetts, I had no idea anything about Georgia. And things started happening. Once you start paying attention to things start clicking. And so it just kind of things just started clicking. And I being in Georgia was really important to the whole process.
Yeah, so John Abbott did move from England around 1751. So this is the timeline that you've already told us is very much intriguing to you. So he comes to America in about 1773 and then moves to Georgia around 1776, and he spends his life there. And like you said, John Abbott was a curious man and also a very detail-oriented person about the world around him. So tell us more about what makes him unique and why his drawings and information is still used today when you talk to naturalists or in modern science. It's still a person that they look to. So kind of walk us through the importance of his work, and then we'll get into why we really don't know much about him. But first, what makes him important?
It's the way he paid attention to insects. He was an observer and he was an artist. And I think being able to draw is a wonderful way to pay attention to something. If you have to draw it, you really have to look at it. And so drawing was kind of central to his ways of knowing. He also wrote notes describing insects, like when he found them, where he found them, what they were doing, anything he could figure out about their kind of life history or reproductive, those kinds of issues. But those notes are short, very, very short. So he wasn't a wordsmith at all, but his drawings are so accurate and so carefully done that I could take these drawings to an entomologist and they could identify what he had drawn. And we're talking, this is 250 years ago. So he had this ability to see anatomy, to see what was important in terms of what naturalists or lepidopterists or entomologists needed to see in order to identify an insect. He was a watercolorist and his technique was supreme. He could create light in his images. So he would draw with a pencil, and then he'd kind of fill it in, kind of like you do with a coloring book. And he would raise the butterflies he drew. So he probably raised 200, 300 different species
Oh,
of
wow.
butterflies and moths. So it was this big operation, kind of. And then he would draw them, but then also he would turn them into specimens and then send them to Europe, to England, to France, and then also up to Massachusetts and New York and places like that, where there were scientists who were all excited about the Americas and what was new. So that he basically combined these skills of a naturalist with being an artist.
So the book is called Loving Insects, and it sounds like he had this very almost emotional connection to insects and the natural world. Was that purposeful in the titling of this book, and what did you want to get across by that?
His drawings are so exquisite and so detailed and require all this concentration and paying attention to things. And for me, I saw those drawings and that's why I saw love. I mean, you don't do that if you're just doing it out of duty or the way to make money, put it in our terms, so you would sell them for 5 cents a piece. But I don't know what that really is in today's money, but not much. So I mean, I saw love in this concentration and intense focus and obsessive care, this complete attention. So that's where I saw the love, and that he reorganized his whole life and came to live in Georgia. Some years he lived in Savannah, but he really felt like he was in prison and he had to get out into the countryside, and he spent, you know, tromping through the woods and the swamps, collecting insects. He also drew birds. So he spent his time outdoors, doing these things. And then he'd come in and then he'd paint and draw. He was a bit of a recluse. So he lived to be in his late 80s. And he continued to do this his whole life. I learned to love insects studying his work. I'm not an entomologist, I'm a professor of literature. And I had the kind of normal fear and disgust, around insects. And I spent about a decade with Abbott. I totally transformed my attitudes toward insects. I find them fascinating. I find them beautiful. I get a lot of pleasure from studying them. I have rearranged my whole garden so that it is native plants, so that I could attract native insects and then the birds that come to eat the insects. So I mean, I feel like my life has been enriched by this experience. And I just wanted to share that with other people. And I know I have friends and family, neighbors who in general do not like insects. They all have insecticide sprayed on their lawns, and insects are often seen as the enemy or a nuisance, or they have a very negative press in the world. And I thought, this book is for those kinds of people. I don't think entomologists will need to read it because they already love insects.
They are so much a part of the balance of our natural world and keeping our natural world in check. And we rely on them so much as human beings. And yet we still somewhat put them in this place of being an enemy when they aren't. And that's a very human thing to do. It's us placing on them thoughts of whether they are good or bad when they are just existing in this world as they are and what their job is in the natural world. What do you think was the reason that John Abbott did not get acclaim in the earlier years or get the recognition that perhaps was due him? Why do you think he was so obscure?
Oh, that's a really good question. I think he was well known in like the 17, well, when his book came out, 1797. It was this beautiful book of 104 illustrations of butterflies and moths in Georgia, complete with the host plants. So it's this combination of botanical illustration with butterflies and moths. And caterpillars. He always had caterpillars in every one of his drawings. And he was well known among this group of insect collectors who were mostly amateur naturalists. But then around my like 1830, he starts to disappear because he's mostly known in this kind of time period when he was had a reputation. It was just kind of this word of mouth and who do you know and talking about him and exchanging letters and correspondence and no kind of major, like Audubon worked really hard to turn himself into a celebrity, a lot of publicity and, doing dramatic things, or where Abbott just was like in the woods in Georgia. That's where he was. He wasn't out there promoting himself or creating a reputation for himself. So he drew a lot of the birds that Audubon drew, but he drew them 20 years before Audubon did. So, and none of his bird drawings were ever published during his lifetime.
Oh, wow.
And he was extremely productive. There's 7,000 drawings that I've encountered, and I'm sure there's more that might be in private hands. So he was just very busy just doing his thing in rural Georgia. And then somewhere along the way, entomology as a field shifted away from collecting specimens and collecting drawings to a different kind of process, which with more proper science. And I think he kind of fell out of the scene. He was no longer doing what was regarded as modern entomology. And he died in 1840, so it was kind of, that
Yeah.
was kind of the end of it. And then he just kind of disappeared in terms of people knowing him and knowing what he had done.
Yeah. But he's such a foundation for so much of modern science in the world of entomology. And if he were here today, what is a question that he would love to have asked him in person?
You know, I think he was very shy. I'm not so sure he would be willing to. I think he was friendly and he to the people he knew, but he knew just a handful of people. I mean, he really was this kind of, I don't know, just a guy living off in the woods. You know, I think there's a way in which if you're going to be influential in the kind of world at large, it requires a willing to kind of publicize yourself. And I think he was just someone who didn't do that.
Yeah. Well, given the challenges that we talked about, the challenges that insects face and their population decline,
yes.
When we talk about loving insects, and you said that Abbott even changed your perspective on insects, why do you think he has such a relevance today, maybe in conservation efforts?
Well, I think it's the beauty of his drawings. And he draws not just butterflies and moths, which are another maligned group of creatures who are beautiful. He drew cicadas and centipedes, spiders. He actually, I think, loved spiders and beetles. He drew all these things, and they're just beautiful. I mean, I'm looking right now at a drawing of a centipede. You don't think of centipedes as being gorgeous. He somehow suffused their bodies with this beauty, which they do have, mm-hmm. if we just looked at them properly, you know, instead of going, ah! I think it encourages to look at them and to actually see them rather than this kind of revulsion that people just have this automatic.
Maybe we have the opportunity to see them through his eyes. And if he saw them as so important and so beautiful, that it gives us that opportunity to see them in that way as well. And when people read your book, what is a takeaway or two that you'd really like people to understand about him and his life?
Well, I think that he's important for us now because we need to learn to love insects. We need to learn to value them, to want to know more about them, to understand, as you said, how they contribute to the world we love, right? I mean, they are crucial to not only the pollination, all sorts of fruits and vegetables and almonds and, you know, your almond milk and your latte. We have to thank bees for that and other pollinators. I mean, I think we just need to know more about insects because the impulse to kill them is the first thing that comes to most people's minds, is to squash them, spray them, to get rid of them. I mean, there are a few truly unpleasant insects, but that's the tiny, tiny minority. I guess the thing is that somehow using beauty as a way into appreciating and valuing insects, that would be the message. And I feel grateful to Abbott that I've had this experience with him, that he's taught me to appreciate insects. And I think that's hugely important, in particularly this time period when things like lawn care involve automatic insecticide, mm-hmm. you know, being sprayed all over everywhere. You know, people don't even know. They don't know they're killing everything when they do that, but they're killing, you know, beloved butterflies. There's a kind of deep ignorance about insects. And this is just a kind of wedge to kind of break open that and try to develop some kind of sense of their value. You know, it's a gift to see beauty in the natural world. So,
yeah, I think that is so true. And seeing them again from a new perspective might be a great way for people to find a greater love or understanding. This is Beth Tobin, who is a professor emerita of English and Women's Studies at the University of Georgia and has authored many books, including her latest, Loving Insects, which vividly details the work of early American artist and naturalist John Abbott, and serves as a reminder to all of us about the contributions that not only he had to shape modern science, but insects do then and today. So thank you so much, Beth, for being a part of This Green Earth.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for listening to This Green Earth.
If you have an idea, we'd love to hear from you. Give us your ideas and topics, your storylines. It's thisgreenearth@kpcw.org.
You can also find us wherever you listen to your podcast. If you like the show and you learned something new, make sure you leave a review. And we'd appreciate it if you click 5 stars.